baseball fans, and welcome to the first edition of the MLB Daily Dish podcast called the Roster Rhetorical. I am one of your three hosts tonight. I'm Chris Schubert. Alongside me are Matt Goldman and the newly crowned, we just crowned this before the show started, Emperor of Hot Takes, Mike Bates is with us. So, hello guys, how are we doing?
Pretty good.
Yeah?
Yeah, not bad. That's incredibly grandiose.
Yeah, I think that name's going to stick. I think over the course of these episodes, people are going to attach to it.
Oh, man. I really hope not. But anyway.
So we were talking before the show, and it would only be fitting if we started the show by talking about the passing of Yogi Berra today at age 90. Hall of Fame player, one of the greats. And Mike, you were telling a story beforehand about Yogi. Do you want to summarize what you were telling us beforehand?
Oh, just, you know, last year I was I heard Dr. Bobby Brown, former New York Yankee third baseman and American League president. He was talking about back when he roomed with Yogi Berra on the road with the Yankees, and you know, he'd be on one bed studying Grey's Anatomy, preparing for his boards, and Yogi'd be on the other bed reading Superman comics, and they'd get done and they'd turn off the light, and you know, Yogi'd wait a beat and he'd say, "So how'd yours turn out?" And you know, just the entire session turned into a Yogi fest with everybody relaying their best Yogi stories. And you know, as great of a player as he was, everybody universally just loved him. What an amazing life.
Yeah, and I think that was a fitting story to tell, as that's how he's remembered by most who played the game, as that, you know, charismatic guy that transcended baseball and was more of a cultural icon. All right, so now let's get to talking about some real baseball. And we have a couple of things that we want to talk about. And we want to start the show by talking about Matt Harvey. And I know what most of you were probably thinking, you know, guys, we don't need to talk about the innings limits. We know what's going on. And we agree. And that's why we're not going to talk about that. But what we are going to talk about is something that the three of us have really kind of been going back and forth all day about. And it's this idea that, you know, maybe the Mets don't, I don't want to use the word need Matt Harvey, but that there might be a path in the future where Matt Harvey no longer wears the Mets colors because he gets traded. And I want to start this off by opening it up to you guys to what your initial thoughts were when I brought this to the table. And I was like, hey, you know, maybe the Mets could trade Matt Harvey. So Matt, we'll get you in here and I'll start with you.
Well, I think it would be honestly the best course of action for the Mets, because there's no way that they're going to be able to afford Harvey, assuming that his career goes the way that his agent Scott Boras is projecting. If he winds up being on the free agent market as one of the top pitchers with a healthy elbow, it's possible he could get close to $200 million, you know, based on his current trajectory, which the Mets just aren't going to be able to afford, and they're not going to be able to outbid teams like the Yankees and the Red Sox when it comes time to do that. And with a rotation that already has Jacob deGrom, Steven Matz, Noah Syndergaard, and eventually next year, Zach Wheeler, they have a luxury with Harvey, and they can afford to deal him and it not cripple their chances at contending in 2016. And when you start thinking about the prospect packages that the Mets could ask for, it starts to look like kind of a good deal, actually.
Yeah, but at the same time, I mean, so I definitely see that argument, and I actually sympathize with it a lot. Harvey's, he's not winning himself any friends with the way that he and Scott Boras have handled this, the question of his innings limit. I didn't agree to anything, by the way, but I will shy away from the innings limit talk. But I will say, he's not winning himself any friends with this, and certainly the organization has to be concerned with the perception of his concerns about his personal health versus the team's success. But there are just a lot of unknowns here. We don't know what his medicals are. We don't know health-wise what is best for a young pitcher. Is he even a young pitcher anymore, given that he's, 26 already? We also don't know exactly what the Mets' financial health is going to be by the time that he's a free agent in the 2018-2019 offseason. So, I mean, it's really easy to say the Mets aren't going to be able to afford him, but maybe in a couple of years the Wilpons have kind of righted themselves and are able to take on some incredible contracts. But Matt's got a great point. I mean, there is an abundance of pitching in the Mets system right now, and while you can't really have too much, Harvey could absolutely bring back an incredible package of major league talent.
If you're the Mets, you know, you have Harvey for a couple more years of team control before this becomes a pressing issue. And you don't have to overreact and make a hasty decision this winter. You know, you don't have to be like, all right, this isn't working. You know, Boris and Harvey don't see eye to eye with us. You know, we have to do something now. This isn't the Jose Reyes situation, you know, back when it was the last year of his deal and they needed to decide about whether they were going to try to keep him or they were going to try to sign him in the offseason or they were going to try to get some value out of him. They ended up not doing anything. And it hasn't done well since in terms of what they've been putting out the field in shortstop. They've had Wilmer Flores, Ruben Tejada, nothing's really stuck there. So they have a little bit more time to make this decision and be more careful about it. But the more he pitches for this team, the years that go by, that's only going to probably make his value, I don't want to say go up, but it's going to get closer to a dollar amount that they're not going to be able to afford. And we know that Scott Boras is against these contracts that take away arbitration and team control years, so that's off the table. So I guess my question after that long monologue would be, is it in the Mets' best interest to move him now? I know I said that they have a couple years to wait and they can think about it, but does it make more sense for them to move him now? Or do they wait and try to, you know, maybe build some more trade value, but at the same time risk losing him like a Jose Reyes?
Well, I mean, they're going to lose years of control that they can bargain with in terms of his value, right? So he's currently got 16, 17, and 18 where he is under team control before he can hit free agency. And every year that you take away from that is going to take away a good deal of his value. I think you have to at least – I don't think he's unmovable, and I think exploring what his value is right now is not necessarily the worst idea.
Yeah, you had meant Chris. I remember you wrote an article for the site how the Nationals and Rangers had at least in some form or another explored a Steven Strasburg trade, and while nothing came about it, there's no reason that the Mets couldn't do a similar thing. As Mike pointed out, he's got three more years left of control, so you'd essentially be trading for, you know, what you could consider a free agent pitcher who's going to be around. It's not like Johnny Cueto, who's going to be gone in a couple months from the Royals, or David Price, who's got, you know, four or five starts left with the Blue Jays, depending on how far they go in the playoffs.
And really, at the center of this is there are two things. There's Scott Boras, who is really at the center of this in terms of not only being Matt Harvey's agent, but his relationship with the Mets. That's just not very good. We know how he publicly reacted to the failed Carlos Gomez trade, which we're going to get to later on in our second topic. You know, he went public to John Heyman about the innings limits that really started this whole circus. So, you know, that relationship is very frayed in terms of the willingness of Alderson and Boras to sit down and do business, and I think in the end that's just going to affect Harvey. I mean, that's just going to take a team out of the mix because the Mets are not going to negotiate. But I want to get to one other question that I have for both of you guys because I want to get your thoughts on this. Does this inning stuff and the way Harvey has gone about it and portrayed himself, well, I know this is not going to take away millions of dollars or hundreds of millions of dollars from him, but will this impact how much he gets from another team? And if he pitches well, is a team going to be like, you know, we saw what happened in New York with this innings limit, you know, Boras is his agent, this might be a headache we don't want to deal with. Is that something that may shortchange him a couple million dollars when it comes to the negotiating table?
I mean, it's definitely possible. You don't want to say that what's gone on in the last month or two isn't going to alter his perception in the public for fans and, you know, also front offices. But you also have to take into account that if one team doesn't offer that extra couple million, there might be that other team, say the Yankees or the Red Sox or the Dodgers even, that have deeper pockets that say, well, you know, we can basically print money, so who cares about that extra 4, 5, 6 million on the end of a contract, so here you go. And they'll just say, you know, it's just another thing that they can dole out that, you know, a team that the Padres can't.
Right, and we're also talking about another 3 years for this to kind of go away. You know, as long as he stays healthy, presumably the innings limit is not going to be a problem as he continues to to demonstrate his health and his effectiveness. So over time, generally, I think for the most part, it's going to be forgotten and won't be, again, unless he breaks down, an issue when it comes to his free agency or any extension talk.
I think that's going to wrap it up for Matt Harvey talk. Don't you guys agree? I think we're kind of all done with Matt Harvey. Yeah?
Yeah, I do. I would say one thing we didn't talk about and that maybe brings us into the next segment is whether or not the status of Yoenis Cespedes has any impact on whether they make a move with Matt Harvey this offseason. Because if Cespedes is not going to be part of this team in 2016 and beyond, they potentially have a rather large hole in their outfield. Depending on how you feel about Conforto and Lagares' health overall, and maybe a need to acquire a big bat.
Mike Bates is also the king of segues, everybody. He did a wonderful job there. Yeah, but yeah, that's a really good point. The future of Cespedes and if he's going to be on this team or not affects their financial situation. And before the show, when we were just talking and we were getting out a bunch of stuff, we talked about how we don't know what the Wilpons financial situation is, and we don't know what it's going to be like in the future. So there's a commitment that they're going to have to make to what is now going to be a 30-year-old outfielder for probably, as he said to SportsCenter, at least 6 years. And I threw out a figure to you guys that I got off of Twitter that if the Mets could sign Cespedes for 7 years, $150 million, and that's just the base. I have no idea if that's what he's asking for. Would they sign him? And both of you equivocally said no. It was loud in here when they said that. It was a loud no. So that means that they don't have to throw around that $150 million at Cespedes, and they'll have some of that money in their pocket. They have Bartolo Colon's contract coming off this year. That's $10 million. They have to figure out what they're going to do with Daniel Murphy. That's another about $8 or $9 million. So that right there gives them about $20 million to spend that they didn't have this year. And if Cespedes is gone, they have to address the outfield situation. Like Mike said, you know, Conforto's still a young player. You know, what are they expecting from him in his second season? Lagares' shoulder's probably going to need some sort of work on it in the offseason. Kadire, his health is a huge question mark. Granderson can't play every day, so maybe there's a platoon situation there between Kadire and Granderson. That makes a lot of sense. But when you have this wealth of pitching, like Matt mentioned, you know, you can tap into it. And nobody thought it was going to be Matt Harvey. Everybody thought, you know, they would trade Zach Wheeler or Steven Matz, or some even said Noah Syndergaard, even though he was off limits, you know. And they ended up getting the bat that they needed for this year without tapping into any of that, which allows them to now be able to reassess their position and figure out what they want to do from here. But I think that's a really interesting point, Mike, that you brought up, of how Cespedes, even though he's only here for a couple of months, is really going to impact their future.
Well, I mean, in terms of Cespedes, I just don't think it makes sense for the Mets at all to offer him a contract. Like you mentioned earlier before we started recording, he's 30 years old, a 7-year contract. No matter how well he produces for the first 2-3 years of that contract, it's hard to imagine that the last 2-4 years of that deal aren't going to be unfortunate for whatever team, you know, he winds up signing with. You know, you look at the Albert Pujols deal, it's essentially built into the contract that that's not going to be a good thing at the end of the year. And Cespedes, it's not like he's the only outfielder on the market this year. You look at Justin Upton, who's 2 years younger, and while it's hard to predict what type of contract he'll get, it might be in the same range as Cespedes, but then you're getting a younger, more athletic player for maybe a similar amount of years, but he won't be as far into the aging curve when the later years start to kick in.
Mike, didn't you call it the greatest stretch of baseball Cespedes will ever play?
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing, is Upton is 2 years younger, he's also better. Cespedes has, you know, as he ages, he's got incredible tools. He's going to be a decent to better corner outfielder. He's going to have the power. And before this, he's been a good enough outfielder, you know, a 3-win player, 2-3 win player. But this is by far the best that he's ever performed, this stretch that he's had with the Mets. And it's likely the best baseball that he will ever play over the course of the rest of his career. And, you know, I don't think I think whoever winds up with Cespedes is going to be incredibly disappointed, and is going to be disappointed sooner rather than later.
All right. So the first thing that you probably should learn is we do a lot of talking before the show, and we get a lot of good points out, and we didn't have the record button on, so that might have been our mistake. But to segue off of what Mike did is Cespedes was a key deadline acquisition for the Mets, and he has pole vaulted them into a NL East division lead in the final 2 weeks of the season. But there are other teams that have put themselves in positions to do well in the postseason by what they did in July 31st and the days prior. And there are – how many teams do we have here, guys? Five, six teams that we want to talk about here about that they have put themselves in a good position for the postseason?
Well, I mean, it helps us. I mean, we're a site that really focuses on transactions and whatnot. But this is what this was a really active trading deadline. We had like 28 teams who were involved in some deal or another. So a lot of teams got better. A lot of teams improved themselves over the long run by picking up prospects. But if we're talking about just teams that improved themselves for this year, I mean, you kind of have to start with the Blue Jays, right? Because they got Tulowitzki, they got David Price, they got Ben Revere, they got a lot better.
All right, so we'll start with the Blue Jays. Mike took it away and started with the Blue Jays. So, Matt, the Blue Jays, pretty good trade deadline, right?
Yeah, I think without question they had the best deadline. And it's interesting that, you know, they were seemingly a player for Cueto, and then he went off the board so quickly that they kind of had to go into scramble mode, and it seemingly worked out for the best because Cueto has not been good over his last six starts or however many it's been for the Royals, whereas David Price is kind of looking like the front runner for the American League Cy Young, and he's already beat the Yankees three times with the Blue Jays right now.
Yeah, David Price I think is probably the centerpiece for the Blue Jays. I know they got Tulo, and that you pretty much surprised everybody with what they did, but David Price has come in. And everybody thought that the reason why the Blue Jays could never catch the Yankees with all this offense, with Bautista, with Josh Donaldson, with Edwin Encarnacion, all of that power in the middle of the lineup, the reason why they couldn't catch them was pitching. And they got David Price, and this is something that they didn't get through the trade market, but they got Marcus Stroman back from injury. And I think that is a huge boost to their rotation. Him and Price have a 1-2 punch that is probably up there among the best at baseball, and that's really helped the Blue Jays specifically. And I think Ben Revere is an underrated acquisition. They got him really close to that 4 o'clock or 5 o'clock, I forget what the time is, but right near that deadline. And I think that has turned into a good move for them as well.
Yeah, absolutely. I want to get back to Price real quick because he's been just amazing. You know, 10 starts, and I know we don't really focus on wins and losses, and nor should we, but he's won 8 of his 10 starts. Like he's 8-1 for the Blue Jays. He's got a 1.95 ERA. It matches his fielding independent numbers. He's got 81 strikeouts in 69 innings. I mean, just it's almost like CC Sabathia with the Brewers in 2008 or Randy Johnson with the Astros, where he just came in and has taken over and set a tone for this team. But yeah, you're right. I mean, like a guy like Ben Revere is really easy to overlook on this club, but he's been fantastic. He's got plus defense in the corner. He's had league average offense. I mean, that's an incredible boon to this club. And these Blue Jays are going to be ridiculous.
Yeah, and another aspect of Ben Revere's game is the fact that he could come in, you know, in a late inning situation, if he didn't start the game, and steal a base potentially and put himself in scoring position. I don't want to call I don't want to say he could be the next Dave Roberts, because that's the most famous stolen base in baseball history, maybe other than Ricky Henderson when he pronounced himself the greatest ever. But, you know, adding speed for October is something that has proven time and time again is not something to be overlooked.
Yeah, I think that was all well said, guys. But that's just one of many teams that we want to talk about. I have five teams here, and I'm just going to throw them out to you, and you let me know which one you guys want to talk about first. We have the Royals, the Rangers, the Astros, and the Padres, which Matt wants to get into a little bit later, so we may hold off on that one. So we have the Royals, the Rangers, and the Astros, all American League teams that we've discussed so far. So which one do you guys want to talk about?
Well, I'm going to jump in then. I'm going to talk about the Rangers because I don't think I don't think they expected their deadline to work out quite this well for them. I mean, they went out and they got Cole Hamels and they got Jake Diekman from the Phillies in what seems like it was really a long-term play. I mean, Cole Hamels is under contract for several more seasons. Diekman is young. Ish and under contract for more seasons, but and so this really looked like a build for 2016 move, but the Rangers have caught fire and they're back in the playoff race. They are leading the AL West as we speak, and they've really set themselves up well for a division series. What with Cole Hamels and Yovani Gallardo leading their rotation. It's surprising, but that's really fantastic. This is going to be a team that has a chance to really go toe to toe with a club like the Royals or a club like the maybe not the Blue Jays, but whoever comes out of that wild card game.
Matt, anything?
I mean, obviously Cole Hamels is the big name piece of that deal, how could he not? But as Bates pointed out, Diekman has been, I mean, he's got a 2.33 ERA in his 19.1 innings with the club so far. And he's just, been given Jeff Bannister, who, is now seemingly a front runner for the Manager of the Year award, which is something that, you wouldn't have said at the beginning of the year. He's given him another late inning option. And, as the bullpens are a key piece in October baseball. I think last year there were more than a few meltdowns. I always look to, being a Giants fan, I always look to that game two of the NLDS where Matt Williams came out and took Jordan Zimmermann off the hill with one out left to go, and then the bullpen wound up coughing it up.
Well, and look at how the Royals just completely were able to shorten games with Holland, Davis, and Herrera. I mean, yeah, absolutely. Diekman's an incredible weapon. Absolutely.
The Royals almost single-handedly changed the entire perception of the bullpen by themselves just in that one season or that one playoff.
Right. Well, and you bring up a really interesting point about Bannister and Manager of the Year. I don't think anybody would have pegged him for Manager of the Year as of July 31st either. So the Rangers have really put on a full court press here.
Well, we mentioned the Royals, so let's go to them. And they had themselves an active trade deadline, I think that's fair to say. But they got some deals done early. They got Ben Zobrist, who has played really well since coming there. He's played in 48 games and hit .304. I think, if you're a Royals fan, you would sign up for that production in your lineup. They got Alex Gordon back, which was huge. And, the big prize, Johnny Cueto, who has been sort of this hit-and-miss type of trade acquisition for them. He pitches well sometimes, but it's been a struggle lately. So how would you guys grade what they did this trade deadline?
Well, I think, I've always been of the opinion that you need to evaluate a trade at the time of when it happens. Obviously, you can say that, a prospect turned out later on and that kind of affects your perception. But at the time, Johnny Cueto was pitching like an ace and they went out and got him. And Ben Zobrist has been the super utility player over the last 6-7 years. And he gives them an incredible upgrade over Omar Infante, who's just been god-awful the entire year.
Yeah, no, I think Zobrist is fantastic in terms of also his flexibility, his ability to fill in for Alex Gordon when Alex Gordon was down, and now his ability to be a huge upgrade over even a healthy Omar Infante, which he currently isn't. That was a really, really, really fantastic deal. And I agree that really it's unfair to criticize them for the Cueto acquisition, which we were all lauding at the end of July, right? He's when he's on, he's a fantastic pitcher, and this is not typical of what we've seen. There's a good chance that he'll be the guy that we expect him to be once we're in October and that he gets through this rough stretch.
Yeah, I remember after the trade happened, I was shocked that Dayton Moore was able to pull off that trade without giving up any of the top three. I think it might have even been four top prospects, according to Baseball America. He was able to keep Zimmer, I want to say Mondesi and Almonte. They really didn't empty the farm, even though they were able to get two of the most highly sought after trade targets on the market this year.
And this is a league where, you know, you have to move your assets to, if you want to make a trade. And the Mets did it. The Astros, the team we're going to talk about next, did it. They saw themselves in a position where they didn't expect to compete this year, but they're there. So they're going to tap into their system and make some moves. And I think, like you said, Matt, at the time, what the Royals did was probably one of the best deals of the deadline, getting Johnny Cueto without tapping into that top end of their system, keeping themselves prepared for the future.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think you can argue against it that, you know, it's not their fault that Cueto is seemingly falling apart now, unless they did something drastic like change his pitch selection, which, as far as I know, they haven't. You really can't blame them for Cueto's struggles.
Well, and his velocity is holding steady, too. I mean, it's not like he's pitching like he's hurt. He's like his velocity range is very typical for what we'd expect, and you know it could just be a bad stretch and something that's he's going to work through.
All right, let's segue to the Astros. I mentioned them, and they are kind of a big piece of this puzzle. They got Scott Kazmir, and they were part of that move specifically kicked off the deadline. That's what got the ball rolling, and Matt and I were joking beforehand that we had recorded the first episode of this podcast right before the day of that trade happened, or the day before, excuse me. And that episode, we never were able to get it up on the site and ready to go, so we consider that the lost episode because that podcast episode kind of started this train in motion, and the Astros got Scott Kazmir. They added Carlos Gomez, who he himself played a huge role in this deadline in terms of, you know, the failed deal with the Mets leading to Cespedes going to the Mets, and that changed the whole complexity of the deadline. But guys, the Astros, Kazmir and Gomez, pretty good, right?
Pretty good. Yeah. I mean, don't forget about Mike Fiers too.
Right, forgot that really he was part strong of that deal.
He's been a huge addition and incredibly helpful. I can't help but think as we look at how Gomez has struggled and has been hurt. You know, it's good that he's not just somebody that they acquired for this year, because on its surface, the acquisition of Carlos Gomez is not looking like one of the better moves this deadline. There were concerns about his health. As far as I know, those concerns seem to have been proven correct. We kind of made fun of the Mets when this deal has fallen apart. They certainly seem to have gotten the better end of it.
Yeah, and you know, just like what we were saying with the Royals, where you can't blame them for Cueto's struggles, you really can't. I mean, unless there was something in the medicals that showed that Carlos Gomez was,
which we don't know. I mean, right. We don't have those.
But you know, it's interesting to point out that that's why the deal fell apart, was because the Mets were not okay with his medicals. But you know, at the time, he was a better than league average hitter, if barely by WRC+. He had a 103 rating. But, you know, for his career, he's generally been a 20 to 30% better than league average hitter. And that's what they were expecting. And, you know, you look at their deadline moves, Kazmir, Fiers, and Gomez, that looks pretty solid. But like you said, it's definitely a good thing that they have Gomez for 2016. Otherwise, that may have turned out to have been a poor decision in terms of prospects for Houston.
I think it's only fair to also evaluate the Gomez deal on the fact that they got Mike Fiers back. I mean, that kind of lessens the blow of the struggles that Gomez had, is that they also got a starting pitcher that's helping their rotation. And I think that
absolutely, especially considering that Kazmir hasn't exactly set the world on fire either.
Right.
Kazmir's got a 3.31 ERA, which is okay, but his fielding independent numbers are much closer to a 5 ERA. He's walked more batters. He's allowed way more home runs. His strikeouts have fallen. Scott Kazmir has really bounced back and is one of baseball's great stories. But you also, you know, always have to take everything he does with a little grain of salt. And you know, he definitely hasn't been the guy that the Astros were hoping they were acquiring.
And like you said,
not that they paid a high price for him.
Right, and you know what? If they did the deal early enough that they had were able to realize that, you know, maybe this isn't working out, we probably should get a backup plan, and getting Mike Fiers thrown into that Brewers deal made them kind of look like the winners in the end, even if Gomez's medicals were a problem. I think everyone at the time was saying, even if Gomez isn't 100% and that hip is still bothering him, they got Mike Fiers, and that's a pretty good young piece for their rotation. So I think in the end, the Astros did a pretty good job of maneuvering themselves and making adjustments, even after they had made a trade in the, earlier in the month. So let's shift gears a little bit. And Matt, you want to talk about a team that isn't in contention but has had a huge impact on the playoff races across the board. And you were explaining this to me earlier, and I thought this was really interesting. So go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, when the trade deadline was rolling around, I know our account was heavy and waiting for AJ Preller to do something. Everyone,
anything.
Part two, yeah, AJ Preller, part two.
And while he did do something, it was actually to acquire Mark Sheshinsky. I'm sure I didn't pronounce that right.
It's Repchinsky, I believe.
Okay, we'll just call him Scrabble for now.
Okay.
So when they, I mean, that was their weird move, was to acquire someone, and at the end of the deadline, someone reported, I can't remember who it was now, that AJ Preller still thought the Padres could take the West, which just set Twitter on fire, because no one could see how they could contend with how awful their defense had been. Their pitching hadn't been as great as, you know, they had maybe projected. Ian Kennedy took a step back. He's come back to more regular what to expect from him over the last month or so. But he, AJ Preller,
or how they were going to get past the Dodgers or the Giants.
Right. I mean, it just really didn't seem plausible at all. And so everyone, you know, us included, expected him to just deal, you know, 7, 8, 9, 10 players and just restock his farm system that he had depleted by acquiring all those players earlier last winter. And I'm sure it messed with a lot of teams' plans. I look at the Yankees because there were the rumors that they'd wanted Craig Kimbrell and were even willing to take on most, if not all, of his salary. In addition to, I want to say, Jed Jorko's contract, if I'm remembering that correctly.
I was actually just going to say, I don't remember what the exact pieces of the deal were, but I knew that they wanted to eat a lot of money. And you're right, Jorko was probably the key piece to that. They were willing to eat, I think, almost all of it, right?
I think it was. And, you know, obviously I'm not a GM and none of us are, but to hear the words, I will eat Jed Jorko's contract and you not to jump on that deal is just mind-boggling to me. And you know, you look at Dellin Betances, who's been a shutdown reliever for the past 2 years. He's really struggled in the month of September, and you have to wonder if it's because of the, you know, the incredible workload that he's had to endure over the last 2 years. Joe Girardi has just been going to him seemingly with every chance he's got. And while he's got a 1.80 ERA in September, his FIP is a lot higher. It's 5.54, and his walks per nine in these last 10 innings have jumped to 8.10. And he's been a little shaky, especially in the Blue Jays series. He's gotten out of it, but he's been putting runners on base. His homer per nine has jumped to 1.80, and that's just really not going to work in the playoffs.
Yeah, they have the Padres were interesting because I know internally us at the Daily Dish were really like trying to figure out what Preller was up to. We had some ideas of what may be happening, but he just never ended up doing anything. In the end, we were all like looking at each other like, what's going on? And you're right, it had an impact. I think I remember Betances in the Subway Series this past weekend. Girardi had him pitch two innings in a, I think it was a 4-0 game. He came in the eighth and pitched the eighth and the ninth. It was really interesting. And Girardi has a tendency to maneuver his bullpen to the chagrin of many of the Yankee fans, and I don't think that they like the handling of Betances.
Yeah, and I'm not sure how you could. You know, he's still a relatively young guy. He's 27 years old, and he has, you know, probably one of the best curveballs in baseball and just generally some of the best strikeout stuff. And, you know, you saw what happened to Johnny Venters. Now it's been a few years, but the Braves just ran him into the ground, and he's now trying to come back from his third Tommy John surgery, which is a list that is only inhabited by three people. The other is Jason Isringhausen, and I'm blanking on the third member.
Josh Johnson? Didn't Josh Johnson just have it?
Silly. Yeah. He's the only other guy. And that's really not a club you want to be in. So if I were a Yankee fan, you know, I'm not saying that his elbow is going to fall off with the next pitch he throws, but, you know, innings
add
up.
I'm not saying it's not either.
Right. You're making an assumption there, man. I don't know. Matt? Go ahead. I thought you were going to continue your thought there.
No, I mean, it's just, it's interesting that, you know, like you said, I want to say Girardi even used Betances in a game that they were up by 8 runs, and you just kind of put your hands up in the air. Why are you doing that? You're trying to get into the playoff series. You want to rest your best guys when you have the chance. And especially with their bullpen, really, after Andrew Miller and Betances, there are a lot of question marks. You'd think you'd want to give someone like Andrew Shreve a chance to maybe work through his issues, and an 8-0 or an eight run lead is, you know, seemingly the time to do that.
Keith Ball's head might explode by the end of the year with some of the hashtag smart baseball decisions around the league.
Yeah, right. Well, I think that this is actually a really interesting thing, is that the Yankees didn't do much at the trade deadline, right? And so they didn't improve themselves, and now I think they're suffering for it. And I think that as we look ahead to the postseason and you know, start to think about where the Yankees are going to fall in that tournament, you know, I think they're going to look back and really regret that they didn't make moves to make themselves better when they had a chance.
You use the word tournament. I think we should rename the postseason the MLB tournament. I like that.
Nah, I'm a little bit too much of a traditionalist for that.
Really? You used the word. I was playing along.
I know, but I mean, it's what it is. But it's still, it's the postseason. It's the...
All right. So, is there anything that we missed? Anything you guys want to add before we wrap this thing up?
Really, the only thing was I accidentally called him Andrew Shreve. His name's Chasen. So, for all the Yankee fans listening, my bad.
Well, they're gonna light you up in the comments over that.
Oh yeah, I'm sure.
You're done. It's just call it quits.
I don't want to get ahead of myself, but I do want to point out that the Twins are on the verge of being one game back in the American League wildcard race, so I'm feeling pretty good this evening.
I think the Mets ended up losing 6-3. Can we get a national score update?
No. The Nationals lost 4-3.
The Nationals lost. Okay, so the magic number for the Mets is now 5. All right, I feel a little bit better. All right, so I think that's going to do it for us. We thank you for joining us for this first episode of the Roster Rhetorical MLB Daily Dish Podcast.